Hey there, folks. It's the frequency from beyond space and time, at the same time, every time. You're listening to Mad Tower Radio.
What's up, everybody? Welcome back to Mad Tower Radio, episode 53. My name is Dan, as always, joined by my co-hosts, Christian and Ryan. And today we have a special guest up in the recording booth with us. We have Dom returning, hot off of his erotica case. He's just here to do some commentary, some domentary, if you will. And other than that, how's it been going, guys? How's it been hanging?
Pretty good.
Yeah, you already know that.
Solid. Solid. You're
making the editing process nice and easy for me. Hey, that's what I like about you two. You don't hold it back.
I just wouldn't feel good going to bed at night if I didn't tell you guys of all the comedy of technical errors that occurred during our last recording session. And it was really weird. So I jumped in call a little bit early, and I was actually streaming Hades because Christian hopped in early too. But while we were sitting there, we were like, you know, maybe there's no podcast tonight. Maybe we're just playing Hades.
Oh, you're talking about Wednesday. Yeah.
And then Christian booted up a game, and I hear him maybe 5 minutes later. He's like, maybe there is no podcast tonight. And then finally Ryan hopped in, and we were like, Ryan, there's no podcast tonight. We're just hiding in the recording booth playing games.
And that's just what happens. That's all it
takes.
That's
what we did, you know? We took an MTR mental health day. We just relaxed, you know? If we don't got any fucking bullshit, you know, without further ado, Ryan.
They ain't got no bullshit here tonight. Only bullshit we talking about today is my topic. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I was letting y'all flap in the wind because I knew there were some transitions in there. Y'all just had to get to it.
Listen, I got this, all right. Do you guys ever think about how there's a repository of our voices that people can pull to make AI stuff with? I think about that sometimes, how many episodes we have. That being said, you guys ever been cut before?
Have I ever been cut? Yes. Yeah. Sure. What's the stupidest thing you've gotten a cut by?
Oh, my God. So I have this scar on my finger because when I was in college, I was eating corned beef out of the can. And I left it there. And it was like one of those, like, you know, like those World War One, like you peel it open, like, so it's like just serrated metal. And I left and I came back in and I stubbed my toe and I tripped and my hand crashed down onto the corned beef can and I sliced open my finger down to the bone, dog.
To the bone.
Jesus.
Bone dog. Rah, 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 bone dog. Do you know what I'm saying?
that's a pretty dumb one, yeah.
Yeah. And I had to, so like, I was doing like a shoot for a movie. So I was like in ogre makeup, and I had to go to the ER dressed like an ogre. Like I'd like shit all over my face and stuff like that. It was really bad.
That sounds brutal.
Solo and ensemble in the eighth grade. You guys know what that is?
The eighth grade?
No, solo and ensemble.
No, I don't know what that is.
All these theater majors, and none of y'all been to a fucking solo and ensemble. Okay, anyway. Solo and ensemble is like, it's like a track meet, but for choir.
Okay.
Yep.
It sounds horrible.
Yep. You go in, they rent out some elementary school for the weekend, and like in every single classroom, you're performing the fucking song, you know. It's whatever, it's fun. But I'm just sitting at the cafeteria waiting for my quartet's turn, you know. And my dumb ass is just rimming my finger on the lip of a can of Fanta. Just idly. And I'm like, it's never cut me before. And I just hit the right angle and just sliced pretty fucking deep into my fingertip, like 15 minutes before we were supposed to go and perform. And my choir teacher comes over and she's like, are you serious right now? Because I'm just like fucking gushing blood from my finger and like my nice polo and khakis and shit. She must have been fucking pissed.
I'm glad she's dead.
I don't know that. Yeah. I don't know if she's dead or not.
I have no idea if she's dead.
Oh. Well, if she is, here, you better believe I'm happy about it.
Did you cut yourself on, Christian?
So, I have the distinct displeasure of working with blades.
Now that I think about it, this seems pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Yeah. I get cut and stabbed and poked and prodded every day. It just happens. But my least favorite or the dumbest one, is that the context?
Yes.
I was in this class with this girl. I think Ryan knows her. And we were doing a like fencing exercise. And she's like, oh, I fence.
Yeah.
And the point of the maneuver was to like lightly move the blade off the line of your body so that you could like reach your opponent. And she just fucking puts it in my chest.
Oh, God.
And I'm like, girl, the point of this exercise is not to stab me. It's to like... We're all on stage here. We're all here for fun.
It's not a real sword fight.
And she's like, "No, I'm sorry. It's just in my reflexes. You know, I'm a fencer. And I'm fence a warrior. All the time, so it just sort of happens. It's in my blood.
I'm a warrior.
Sorry, I promised and my master I wouldn't go all out.
And oh she put that God. Shit right like right on my rib.
Fuck,
dude. And just poked it. It rocked.
Damn.
You should have bit her head.
Like a praying mantis, man.
Me and Ryan are out here like fucking sniffing glue and cutting our hands on soda cans, and Christian's out here like in actual sword fights,
losing them,
losing sword fights. Man, you know what? That being said, though, what did you guys wrap yourself up in when you got hurt?
This shit was horrible. That's a fucking horrible transition. You stupid ass. Okay. I'm back.
Mayhap you wrapped up your injured part in
Holy
a bandage.
Holy shit.
Actually, I've taken the no bandage pill. I'm bleed maxing.
I actually didn't get bandaged up. They like put some glue in the cut and closed it shut and put a band-aid on it, and I paid like $700. I was very mad. That being said, bandages, we love them. How about a man made of bandages?
Yeah.
About a man made of bandages, Ryan?
So today we're talking. It's funny you should ask. Today we're talking about the bandage, man. That's my topic. I actually saw Dom had posted something in the MTR, data bank is what I call it. It's the Discord server. And
there's
something about the bandage, man. Yeah, it's the servers. It's called the Bandage Man was sighted in Oregon, and he had posted that and reminded me that I had seen that picture about 2 weeks prior. So I immediately said I'm doing this one, and I claimed it as my own because it sounded kind of cool.
I saw that picture 13 years earlier when it was the cover of the Honest Hearts DLC, brother.
Dang, bro. The fire, bro. Well, let me set the scene for all you. During the Second World War, sawmills in Oregon saw an increase in production as construction boomed into labor shortages. As the men and women working at the mills rushed to complete their tasks, it's no surprise the number of accidents shot up. After a bad rainstorm, a logger slipped and slid onto one of the saw blades in a way that left deep gashes down his whole entire body. His co-workers were quick in getting the ambulance to arrive, and when they took him, they drove him off to the hospital. Moments later, a loud crash was heard. The ambulance had sped off down Highway 101 near Cannon Beach, a spot also known as Death Row. The ambulance drove off the side of the cliff and crashed. The next day, they found the bodies of the paramedics, but they could not locate the horribly mangled and bandaged body of the sawmill worker.
Damn. So now he terrorizes the beach.
So essentially, how the story goes is several months after this ambulance accident at the sawmill, some people were getting together. They were kicking it. They were like Dorothy. You know, in The Wizard of Oz, instead of clicking heels, they were knocking boots. You know what I'm saying? So they pulled over.
Oh, God.
And so they pulled their pickup truck over near this area. There's like an overwatch of this area. Overwatch. They were like getting intimate. And then all of a sudden, they heard like this banging noise on the lid of like the hood of the pickup truck. And they looked at it. They leaned their seats back up. And there was this thing there. And he was all covered in bandages, and there was this pungent smell of rotting flesh. And the thing starts like scraping its hands on the hood of the car. So the dude quickly starts his car and reverses, almost reversing off of the cliff again.
Oh, shit.
But he stopped himself and took off. And when they looked back, this creature was gone. So essentially, after that sighting, people had started to see this creature wrapped in bandages walking around the area. And so he would like just attack these random people. These sightings literally happened from 1940 to 1950 up to the 60s and 70s, where then they stopped for a bit. But during that time, people in the in the Cannon Beach area near Highway 101, pets would go missing, and they would find them half eaten. There was nothing in that area that would really do that to these pets, like maul them like that and usually just leave half of them. Usually if it's an animal, it's going to eat everything unless it's been scared away. So kind of like the thing is now is if you're driving down Highway 101 and this smell of rotting flesh enters your car, the Bandage Man is in the area. Now, the reason why we brought this up is because, yes, he's been seen for a bit, for over 70 years. But now recently, after this article that Dom had posted, people are starting to see him again over here.
Oh, shit, dude.
Exactly.
That's Bandage Man's son.
Exactly, Bandage Brother. So, people don't know what he is. Like, people who are into the paranormal and stuff, like, oh, maybe he's like a sight-bound spirit. But usually sight-bound spirits aren't as physical as that, leaving dents in cars and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. So what they think that happened was is somehow he's like some type of ghoul. And he lives like in the cliffside somewhere, like in the caves, like you know, very Gollum-esque.
He hills have eyes himself.
Kind of, except he's covered in bandages.
Dang.
You know.
And you said this takes place in what state, Ryan?
It takes place in, it's in Oregon, bro. So, off the shores of Oregon.
So I had read the thumbnail, or I looked at the thumbnail for that article, and that setting that they picked was eerily similar to the 1990s movie The Goonies. Could it be, perchance, One Eye Willie?
Now, while I do agree with that, and I do think that One-Eyed Willie might have been inspired by the Bandage Man, it is funny that you bring up a movie, because what some people think this is during the time when these appearances started happening, a particular movie came out. And this movie starred Boris Karloff. This movie was The Mummy.
Oh.
No.
Yeah, so some people think, because this has been cited by multiple people in the area spanning over 70 years, but what people think it initially started as was somebody trying to be funny and say, like, oh, Oregon has their own mummy, maybe drum up some tourist attractions. Because if you look back at, like, the obituaries of the time, maybe they weren't kept as well. Records, you know, back then records keepings were archaic. There was no reports in the newspapers at the time of a mill worker almost bifurcating themselves on a saw blade.
Right.
And if they didn't have anything in the obituary, they sure as hell would have something from like the hospital records of an ambulance driving off the side of a cliff. However, so it's either it didn't happen, or here's the thing. Highway 101 is called Death Row because hundreds of accidents happen there. So it could have just been one of the many that was just lost to time. No one will ever know. All we do know is that today, people are starting to get that smell of rotting meat in their car, and the Bandage Man is once again on the prowl.
That's interesting.
How does he get new bandages? Because his ass is like running through the forest, getting all muddy and stinky.
I think that he probably finds like a coat or some clothes and just goes to the local Walgreens, picking them up there.
What if he's like a silkworm and he excretes bandages and he like spits on it to like fill in his old damaged bandage?
Once a week, the Negative Man shows up at like CVS to buy to clear them out of all their gauze bandages, but nobody can make the connection.
Hello, fellow human. I'd like some bandages, please.
What if he's a crab and like he molts and like a layer of bandages falls off and a fresh pair underneath?
I think that'd be kind of cool. I think that we should fund a trip there using Dan's partner's credit card.
Oh, yeah.
And go to Oregon and stay at one of the resorts there nearby and maybe go out to that beach for all of 20 minutes and go find out.
All of 20 minutes.
All of 20 minutes. The rest of the time is just like vacation
photos. Yeah.
If it's a funny prank, like if you're the guy who's dressing up as the Bandage Man, like your ass is going to get shot. Yeah.
Yeah, if I saw this man running up, near the blammer's getting emptied.
Well, that's like the problem. Like it was all cool and funny and quirky like in the 70s to dress up in like a gorilla costume and run through the forest. But you can't do that shit nowadays.
Yeah, you're getting blammed.
Do you guys remember
Galilled?
You guys remember back in like 2016 when they were doing like the clown thing, you know?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, someone got shot in Chicago for doing that. They pulled up.
People were posting videos of them just getting out of the car and beating the shit out of these clowns.
Yeah, I saw that. I remember that.
And I felt no sympathy for that dudes, man.
That's what they are. They're clowns.
It literally is.
Oh my god, man. That shit's hilarious. No, there's no funnier like footage to me, videos of like where it's just dash cam and like the headlights illuminate something, like some guy, some creature or something, and then the guy just gets out of the car and starts beating on it. Like that shit cracks me up every time. Like when I pull up and it's the clown, man, I'm sitting in the driver's seat like the Bugs Bunny gif, you know? I expected his origin story to be a little more nefarious, not just like grisly workplace accident. Because Bandage Man, if you're listening and you're the real Bandage Man, like
we will kill you.
No. Come on out of the woods, because you could have a very, very illustrious career as like a fucking OSHA spokesperson or like a union representative.
A union rep,
like,
yeah.
You could make some changes, you know? And keep the bandages. You could be the Joshua Graham of the union.
You could, man. You could help us shut down these like slumlord theaters, like, bro.
God damn it.
Yeah.
God damn it.
Or, you know, like you could have just stood on the edge of East Palestine like a Grim Reaper. He's coming for Norfolk Southern.
Yeah. Yeah, any malfeasant like manufacturing CEO can now await because like disgruntled union reps are gonna dress up as the Bandage Man and burn
yeah,
the house
screw
down.
Everything I just said. You need to become like the Batman for unions.
There you go.
Like you like
that's what I'm saying.
When something crazy like Norfolk Southern happens, you just see Bandage Man appearing on the edge of town. You know, and he's like in these.
But everybody can. We can all be Bandage Man.
Yeah, dude. Oh, that's badass, man.
We need to do his PR. Bandage Man, reach out to us, bro.
Exactly, dude.
Write your email on a long strip of toilet paper and throw it at us.
Yeah, exactly.
When I walk outside my house and I see a lone roll of toilet paper rolling towards me, I'll know. I'll know who sends for me.
Before we park the Bandage Man, when was his last reported encounter?
It was like sometime this month.
Oh, shit.
Fuck yeah, dude. We're off to a good start.
Yeah, so, like, I actually bring, like, a cryptid to the table that hasn't, like, didn't, like, last appear, like, in the 1920s.
Also, he's roaming around Oregon. Is he going to be, like, the soggy Bandage Man? It's all wet up there.
That's what I'm saying. I'm saying, you know what? I think he's doing God's work getting people out of Oregon because that place sucks.
Christian, you want to go next?
Yeah, you want to get a little spooky and mystical?
I do want to get a little spooky and mystical.
I had a lot of fun with the Picatrix episode that I had a couple of months ago, right?
At this point. Yeah.
Was it years?
Yeah, that was like 2 years ago. Dude.
Don't say that. Shut up.
That was like at least a year and a half to 2 years
Come
ago.
Come on.
because I was on.
Hey, but look at what you've accomplished. You have a podcast so successful that you have episodes from years ago.
Stop it, yeah. Bro. I'm
the ceaseless
grand.
March of time. The ceaseless march of time.
Anyway, the Picatrix. It was fucking sweet. I had a great time reading this scary little book, so I wanted to do another mystical tome for you today. So this is Tome Watch. I found us a lovely book called The Son of Knowledge, or the Shams al-Ma'arif. Have any of you heard of this book?
Mm-mm.
I have, no. In fact, not heard of this book.
Okay. Well, it is another, let's call it talismanic, maybe summoning book. And I'm front-facing, out in the open here, just raw thefting Let's Talk Religions video on this book.
Nice.
I'm just taking it all for myself, so go watch it. It's better. His audio quality's better. It's a good channel. Anyway, one thing I did learn from that video and want to bring to our show is the describing of this book as an Islamicit book versus an Islamic book. And to that I would say it is dealing with some Islamic religious subjects, and it's based sort of in that culture, but it isn't strictly,
I think I know what you're saying. Like,
it's not like a religious text, you know?
Yeah, no, like Picatrix made a fuck ton of references to like God and Jesus and everything, but it didn't feel like it was a religious text. It was just like being like, yeah, if you want to cast this spell, you got to do this and talk to God and this, that.
Yeah, it's about that culture and about that subject, but it's not,
yeah,
strictly like, it's not like I'm reading the Quran or something.
So it gets mentioned, they talk about it a little bit, but it's not about Islam.
I mean, this book is way more into that than the Picatrix ever was. You know, okay. The Picatrix was more astrology, it was more sort of like stars and moon and sky. This is like directly on the Arabic language, and it was written by like this Islamic scholar. Go ahead.
Is it that Grail tome you've been searching for, where like you pop it open and it's like how to cast fireball, step one? Or is it more mystic?
I was hoping your ass was going to tell me step one.
No.
I know, right? I was going to say.
I can't find a book with step one.
Wait, so is it more like the Book of Maccabees then? Like, I'm pretty sure that's the one in the Bible.
Book of Applebee's,
like, it's
dude. Dollaritas.
It's about a...
Teach her the Dollaritas spell.
You beat me to it. I was going to say it makes shitty margaritas.
Bring you to the plane of Margaritaville.
But like the Book of Maccabees is like... It takes place like during biblical times, but it's more like actual history documentation as opposed to like here's a religious text. It's more like an appendix that goes with it, kind
of
like that.
This is like an appendix of spells. It's like write this, do this, and this will happen to you.
Like,
it'll give you the steps if you want the steps.
Like this is in the Hogwarts like crypt.
So like you could just bust it out and study magic.
Yes, all but right. You're not supposed to. It says very discreetly on this book that you're not supposed to spread it to people who are, like, dilettantes, who aren't, like, actual religious scholars. It's not for, like, teens to do magic spells. This is for, like, dedicated magicians.
Gatekeeping, okay. I see.
He said gatekeeping?
You can't gatekeep my magic.
Can't gatekeep magic.
And it's got a certain reputation, at least from what I can tell and from like the sources that I inspected, as like the older generation doesn't really want to talk about this book. Like it still has that like ooh reputation amongst, you know, the boomers.
Like it's taboo.
It is. It's
so
taboo.
So did Islam also experience this shift where like the kids start learning about how maybe 200 years ago the religion was way fucking cooler, but we're not allowed to now?
Oh, we're like, yeah, we talk about like the sick parts of the Bible or like Christian lore that doesn't really like interact with the modern.
Yeah, practice. Yeah.
I gotta assume it's something like that.
Okay.
The modern bitch boy practice.
That's what it sounds like, because, you know, me and Ryan, when we first heard what an exorcist was, I was like, yeah, when can I go to exorcist school? Yeah. And they were like, yeah, we don't really do that anymore.
I asked my pastor, so when can I learn to fight demons and when can I meet Makima? Is she here?
Damn, is she Ryan, in the room with me? Like the exorcist boondocks.
I'll contract with whatever fucking devil I need to, Pastor Josh, all right?
So the specific power in this book is calling on the power of the Arabic language specifically. It goes into detail about how the Arabic language is innately powerful. It's the language of the angels in heaven, and so that you can use this language to sort of use some of this godly power. And it makes a very firm distinction between like using God's power, like God is coming down to do something to you, or like not God's power, like a power related to his energy, but it's not him.
So it's like, hey man, like, you know, it's like, yeah, your purify water spell, you know, that's not really God.
Exactly. And that's what like separates it from the religion. They start off with like, oh, how do I get like women to like me, or how do I like solve a scorpion
virgin
bite?
Magic.
Or how do I, you know, summon the Red King of the Djinn? It starts to get a little more advanced, a little deeper further on. And then
so,
there is this
What does it expand upon these entities? Like, is, I don't really know for Islam, but is Islam like that where they're like, nope, they like, does Islam allow entities to exist that are not, you know, tied back to God? Like, is this red jinn king, is he his own force?
There is, yeah. And I was so interested in the jinn section of this book. Next episode's gonna be like a jinn roundup.
All right, bet.
We're gonna check it out. But yeah, the specific spell is like Al-Amar, the Red King, whose like father was the first jinn or something like that. There's a whole family tree and a lineage for these.
That's pretty badass, and I don't think anyone should be summoning him. I feel like he's gonna get pissed.
Don't call him.
Yeah.
The main, let's say, spell weaving in this book is what drew me to it. I think it has a very super interesting magic system, and it's making these, they're called, like, I'm gonna fuck up this Arabic word super hard. This, like, Afak.
You're good. My topic is also based on a foreign language.
And they are these, like, numbered, or these, like mystical squares.
Hmm.
It uses Arabic in this, like, Sudoku-like configuration, and using numerology and their associations.
So it almost kind of looks like it's a solve to cast.
You have to, like, know what each of the specific scripts mean, and also what, like, numbers are associated with them, and then you do have to, like, solve the spell to be able,
like,
to cast
it effectively.
Like, does
this read in a certain way? Up, down, left, right? Like, are one of these the result? Because you said Sudoku, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Does it play like a puzzle, kind of, you know? Because this just looks like a game, like a code game.
It is, you're adding, like, the sums of a line.
Okay.
And certain numbers are associated with, like, certain astrological bodies or certain
right.
phases of the moon. And so if you can use these scripts in Arabic to make the same number show up, say, every single time you add up a line or add up a row or a column, it all makes that number. It'll, like, multiplicatively strengthen the associated numbers spell effect.
Oh, interesting.
Oh.
So, like,
okay, cool.
The goal of that square, I don't know what it says. I don't read Arabic. But hypothetically speaking, a goal of a square like this would have each line and row, column or row, whatever the fuck, add up to the same number. And then that number is the effect that they want to invoke.
Okay. Huh. That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was super neat. Now, like, there's some astrological aspects to it. Like, each of the planets gets a number.
Hmm.
And they're associated with different powers. You know, like astrology.
Yeah. That is cool, you know. And now that I think about it, how old is this?
14th century, I believe.
Okay. That's interesting, because the only other, like, numerology mysticism that we've talked about on the show was Pythagoras, you know.
Sure.
So I was just wondering if, like, and I know that it's debated where Pythagoras studied, but it's commonly accepted as Egypt, you know. So I'm just wondering if this was around when he was around there. Fucking plagiarizing Eastern magic.
I mean, Ahmed Al-Bouni is a, I believe, Algerian scholar, but he did work in Cairo, I want to say.
Yeah.
On his travels. There's also talismans, where you, like, write the specific script that you want onto, like, a rock or something. And there's a frequent use of a spell is, like, you'll write one of these numbered squares in ink, and then you'll wash away the ink with water, and then you drink that water, and then you get the spell's powers.
Oh, huh.
That's kind of cool.
Like, there's all these really interesting little variations of it.
So it is really focused on the language, huh?
Yes, it's a very language-focused spell book.
That's pretty cool, because I really haven't heard of any other kind of, like, language-based magic.
There was this really interesting modern incident with this book. I don't know if they were, like, using it on set, or they had a copy of it on set, or, like, they were reading from it. But I think it was, like, a 2003 film.
Was it where The Mummy?
It was not The Mummy. It was an Arabic film. And they had this book involved in it somewhere. and one of the actors died in this like tragic accident, and it's like culturally associated with like they were using the Shams al-Ma'arif, and like a genie fucking killed him.
Oh, that's fucking cool. That's a sick urban legend.
That's super cool.
He deserved it.
That's what he gets fucking around with magic.
Does he deserve it? Saying.
He deserves for appropriating a religion, yeah.
So what's going to happen to me? I'm bringing this book on this goofy-ass podcast. I'm going to get gripped by a genie tonight.
See you later.
Yeah. But you're not going around to me like, hey, what's up? I'm part of this religion. He probably was doing that. That will get him killed by a genie.
Dude, Ryan's out here condoning a lot of death tonight.
Ryan's out for blood.
Listen, I couldn't do that. I'm a member of
Mensa.
I'm a member of the church. Member of Mensa. I'm too smart to like that.
Mensa or Mensis, brother?
Dang, both, brother. Dude.
And interestingly enough, it is raising, or it's becoming newly popularized, especially in Western-speaking communities, because just last year, it got its English translation.
Ooh.
Shams al-Ma'arif, the son of knowledge, or the son of Gnosis, knowledge.
Ooh. Oh.
Hit American shelves just last year. I couldn't find a copy, and I'm not paying for a book for this show.
That's pretty cool. Was it fanlated before?
It was just in Arabic.
Ah.
And okay. You know, mate, like it's an Arabic spell book. Like it uses that language.
I'm just trying to see how much of like new to us it is. You know what I mean?
I mean, it's been in the popular culture in the Middle East as like a source of like ancient Sufi mysticism. Like it's been popularly read amongst scholars and politicians and the like in that part of the world.
It just wasn't nothing over here. Okay, fair enough. Not like we have any shortage of mystical tomes.
Exactly. And I wanted to just give it a little highlight because, you know, it's less known than the Picatrix. It's got a little bit more cultural relevance to this specific region.
So what's like the best spell coming out of there?
The best spell. Let's see here. Being able to not find the book had a lot of problems with me finding out the specific spells.
Yeah.
But there was one. Oh, it's this YouTube video. It's this guy. He uses the Shams al-Ma'arif to like summon a djinn wife.
Hell yeah, dude. Simp magic.
Not the simp magic.
And it, like, kills his whole family.
Oh my god. Like, this is a story in the book?
No, this dude in Saudi Arabia used this book and used that spell to summon a djinn. And then, like, his whole family died.
Oh my god.
That's what he gets her. You know what? But you know what? He was using something so serious to, like, get earthly gain. I think he deserved it.
But did he get a wife afterwards? Like, did he get a girlfriend?
No.
He's dead, Dom.
He got clickbaited by a fucking by an ancient book.
The oldest clickbaited the book.
I know. Do you think that we're just the newest victims of this guy's grift from way back in the fucking day?
Do you think I'm being grifted by the author, Ahmad al-Buni? No, I don't think he was like, I'm gonna get these fucking nerds.
Okay. So you think this is a good faith magic book?
I do. I do think it was a good faith magic book.
Okay.
You're telling me they were using this for good?
Well, there's like, hey, you know, my son is having a hard time finding a wife, or like, hey, I got stung by a scorpion. Like, there's like medical, practical-ish uses for this book.
Alright, we can fix your son's, scorpion sting, but there's a big cost. How much do you love
this
your son?
Genie is going to kill your whole family, by the way.
not all of them are genie summoning.
Does it want, and I know I'm about to be disappointed, but what are the combat spells looking like?
There is a certain spell to enhance your strength.
Oh, there's a strength, okay, spell.
Because one of the other uses, or one of the other categories of spell, is the uses of God's name.
I see.
There were a lot, or in the Arabic language, there are a lot of words that are associated with God's name. So something like the powerful, the redeemer, the merciful, you know, that kind of like evocation without saying the name.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's like incantations writing the powerful, and in that specific way that is an incantation or an evocation of that entity to gather some of that strength or some of that aspect of that name for you.
Oh, that's badass, dude.
There's some pretty cool ones. And there's a lot of old archaeological findings I found of like rocks with spells written on them from this book.
Oh, that's badass.
Like dudes were making little talismans. Would you be drinking the magic spell ink?
Ah, I mean, what's the spell? I mean, I imagine it probably just tastes a little gross, but I mean, I'm not going to drink fucking ink for like a take out the garbage spell. I'll just take out the garbage.
Okay.
You know, it's all about why do I have to drink this ink if it's for a good enough spell? Yeah, sure.
Or there's little examples like write this certain script on 4 pieces of cotton and keep them in your pockets when you travel and you'll be safe on the road.
That's like, interesting.
There's some folky stuff. And then there's like the hard stuff, like the djinn summoning, which I will come back for and examine some pretty sweet djinn in the next episode.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Let's do it.
I know this. I know one day we're going to find like the combat spell book, you know?
And we're going to die. You know us. Yeah. It's going to kill us.
I think the Battle Mage's tome is like Smith and Wesson catalog.
Fair enough, I guess.
And that's, you know, that's what we got. Please enjoy.
Well, I will continue this globe-trotting adventure. You got Oregon, you got the Middle East, and now we're going to Germany, where I am going to tell you guys about Weltyslayer.
What'd you say?
Yeah.
It's German, brother. It's a V.
That's a spell. That's a spell from Picatrix, actually. Enjoy the curse. No, Weltyslayer roughly translates to World Ice Theory, which is what we will be referring to it from now on. I'm not going to try and speak German this whole fucking time. But it's hard to categorize what exactly it is. It's some kind of alternative science, and it's like an explanation. It's like an all-encompassing explanation kind of thing. It's a grift. Let me just get into it, right?
So, it's a grift.
It's fucking cracked, man. So this theory was crafted by Hans Horbiger at the turn of the century, right? He started crafting his work in the 1890s. And it pretty much argues that ice is one of the biggest building blocks to life. And that, like, ice just plays a way bigger factor in, like, the creation of the world, right? And you have to be cracked to even buy into it, right? Because he poses that the origins of the solar system was when a regular star, our sun, I assume, was just sitting there in the center burning away, and a, quote, smaller dying waterlogged star crashed into it and sent the smaller star exploding into the galaxy, right? And this all the water from this waterlogged star just turned into these gigantic chunks of ice that are just free-floating in space. Hmm. Yeah. And you pretty much, like, if you want to get on this train at all, you just have to accept waterlogged star. He doesn't expand on it. He doesn't...
It sounds like a Kirby level.
Mm-hmm.
He doesn't expand on these waterlogged stars or anything like that. Like, it's essentially his Big Bang was some waterlogged star crashed into a regular star, and it just sent a fuck ton of ice out into the galaxy. You know, he claims that these blocks of ice start to slowly swirl into the planet. Like, they get caught up in orbits, right? He says Jupiter is as big as it is because it's just absorbed much more ice blocks over time. And they don't collide with Earth either, right? So when it happens, I guess the block of ice just like spins rapidly around the Earth and kind of just like grates itself against the atmosphere and turns into a hailstorm on the surface.
Oh, that's where hail comes from.
Yeah, obviously, dude. That's where hail comes from.
Boop.
Okay.
You know, and he said that Earth has actually had like 6 or 7 moons, right? And they started off as these ice blocks. He claims that there's certain geological evidence that proves this. Hans, he got a follower for his work, you know. He had a one H.S. Bellamy, who translated his works to English and kind of built onto the mythos. Made all these pseudo-archaeological assertions that, you know, stories and myths from history are actually about our old ice block moons crashing into the Earth.
Okay, like the flood and stuff?
Yeah, yeah, like, yeah, pretty much like equating stuff like that to, you know, oh, that was one of the ice blocks.
Mm-hmm.
And he also worked on this with another guy, Philip Johann Heinrich Fouth. And Mr. Fouth, he was just a hobbyist astronomer and a school teacher. Like, none of them really had the credentials to be working on this shit, by the way. Like, Hans Horbiger, he was, like, a pipe fitter. He did something in the trades. Oh, here it is. Horbiger registered a patent for his invention. Yeah, he was working in chemistry. He made a bunch of fucking, like, industry shit.
Like, and he knew the truth.
What year is this?
He lived from 1860 to 1931. He didn't really start working on this till the 1890s. So, like, from the 1890s to 31 is around when this has taken place. Let me move on to the man, Hans Horbiger, right? So Hans brought this to the scientific community, and it was met with some scrutiny. And by scrutiny, I mean he was pretty much fucking laughed out of every room that he presented this in. Like, people were like, bull fucking shit, dude. Like, everyone thought it was a big joke. And so during World War I, he took some time to rebrand his whole strategy. And he wanted to bring his world ice theory to the common man, you know, to the people who weren't bought and paid for like these other scientists. It worked really fucking well. He started like an entire cultural movement. There were books and movies and literature about that, like, took place in this ice world universe. The common man was buying up the ice world theory. And he started rebranding it as a cosmic truth, you know. And it worked so well that people were showing up to, like, actual good faith astronomical meetings and events, like eclipse watching and shit like that. And were heckling people about world ice theory. Like, essentially the equivalent of a flat earther walking up to, like, a telescope enthusiast meeting and being like, "You guys are all hacks. You guys are all phonies." Like, people were doing that, but for the world ice theory.
Do you have any sources on a world ice film that I could maybe watch?
I did not look up any of that stuff. I did not look into the cultural movement too much.
That's okay.
Because I got sidetracked in... I really firmly believe that we're only still talking about this shit today. Like, the only reason world ice theory didn't get buried was because... you know, right towards the tail end of his life, the Nazi Party started to get big in Germany. You know, the upper echelons of Nazi society, they didn't want to be seen believing in this, quote, soulless Jewish science, you know? So a lot of Nazi Germany, like, accepted the fucking world ice theory because it was German science and therefore better.
Oh, you're saying they didn't want to believe, like, the conventional
stuff. Yes. Gotcha. Like,
get the fuck
Hitler was like, "This is a German theory, therefore it is right, and therefore it is ours." You know, like, that's what he did, was he was like, world ice theory. Because that was the thing for Nazi Germany at the time. Look at all these alternative sciences and shit like that that were, so they could distance themselves and create an identity, whatever the fuck they were trying to do. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah.
That's what they did with this. And I could not find the details. I wanted to find the details to see how Hans felt about this. I wanted to know if he was down, if he was ready to just, like, fucking sell it all to Hitler. But I was able to find out about his sidekick, Fouth. So, unfortunately, Hans died pretty early into the Nazi regime. Right. But our boy, Fouth, he survived. He lived pretty decently well into it. Now, this man was a hobbyist astronomer who made hobby maps of the moon. And he was, like, really fucking wrong about a lot of it. But since he had his name on World Ice Theory, Heinrich Himmler gave him the title of professor, even though he never went to a university or received a doctorate. And he was like a card-carrying SS scientist and party member and everything.
That's real. It's like, hey, man. We know that you like that German shit, so we know it's not real.
They were like, hey, bro, you spouting off about the World Ice Theory? And he was like, oh, yes, the World Ice Theory. And they were like, oh, Professor Fouth.
They were like, Professor Fouth, we are trying to colonize the moon. We have the technology. What equation do you think would get us the right trajectory? He's like, I've never actually taught anything in my life.
Somebody probably came up and, like, a new guy probably asked him a real scientific question and had to get pulled to the side and be like, yeah, you can't actually ask him anything. And our boy Fouth still has a crater on the moon named after him today. And you can thank Operation Paperclip for that.
We need to nuke that crater.
You know, like, all that to go and say that you can fake it till you make it.
You can fake it till you make it. Here's another success story. But yeah, so now we get to play Guess the Grift. What do you think, where do you think the spark for World Ice Theory came from?
The guy's ice cream had melted.
Space cold.
What?
He said a space cold?
Yep.
He got a cosmic sniffle? Can you elaborate, please?
No, he just thinks space is cold.
Space is cold.
Well, I mean, space do be cold.
No, that's not what you said. You said
space cold.
Space cold.
So you think he's just sold on it?
I think this man's fucking stupid.
This is stupid.
Well,
but what he's getting at, right, is like, do you think he actually believed this or he used it for influence or whatever?
The way that Dan had explained to me in the car on the way
Dom
over.
Dom knows the answer. He's an unfair ass.
The way it sounded to me was just a huge load of horse shit.
Yeah, when I told Dom, he was like, how did anybody fucking believe this? Well, I'll do the reveal then. And this is straight from his article. Horbiger did not arrive at his ideas through research, but said that he received it in a vision in 1894.
That's how you know it's a grift.
He straight up was like, it was revealed to me in a dream.
Space dream.
Well,
so who was the sleeping dreamer? Who told him?
It was him. Horbiger had a vision that this was how the world works.
So not the fake professor?
No, I don't know. I don't think anybody gave him the vision.
Yeah,
I don't
it
think...
wasn't like an entity that revealed it to
no,
him?
No, no. He just had spontaneous fucking clairvoyance.
And he saw an icy, cold comet cheese grating itself against Earth's atmosphere?
What he actually saw was literally like a model of the process explained, where he just saw like a block of ice slowly spiraling towards an Earth in his mind's eye, which is funny because his disciple, the guy who translated it into English, H.S. Bellamy, when he got into World Ice Theory, all of a sudden he got into World Ice Theory because, yo, this is just like the dream that I had. So I was hoping there would be more. I was hoping there would be more people that were like, oh, I also had this dream, because I really wanted this section to be like the Ice Moon Cult, you know?
Yeah, everyone got that same dream that night.
But it looks like it was just Hans and Bellamy that got the vision. But yeah, Hans was out here, or H.S. Bellamy was out here, like, crafting the myth. He just wrote a bunch of books, like pseudo-archaeologist books, just adding to the World Ice Theory. His first book was called Moons, Myths, and Man, you know, and it was just adding into, it was just developing World Ice Theory.
Are there any sweet, like, deep lore tidbits?
It's pretty obscure, you know, like his doctrine just isn't out there. It's pretty crazy. You can chase it down, you know, but everything pretty much just leads to the same description of the book, which is what I told you guys, you know, what we brushed over. Weird thing is that H.S. Bellamy was actually Jewish, but he still committed. He was still committed to the bit.
Well, damn.
That didn't...
I'm glad he's dead.
That little part didn't have any, you know...
He was like, look, just because the Nazis adopted it doesn't mean it's not real science, all right?
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, he was like, nope, it's still world ice theory.
Did, like, ice come down from the sky and, like, create the Great Lakes? Did it like, raise mountains? Did it form the rivers? Like, what's the ice doing?
It's essentially doing that. I guess it's essentially, like, injecting the earth with liquid water, you know, just over
like
these...
Like, that's where our water all came from?
All he does is fucking come in and tell us that there's giant blocks of ice that crash into earth sometimes. You know, like, he also talks a little bit how there's, like, different kinds of ice, you know? Like, there's the actual, like, super ice for when it's, like, in the void of space. Or there's, like, some kind of force called global ether, which is also made of ice. Like, it's just the most, like, uncompiled thing.
Maybe he was a herald for the Wild Hunt.
Fuck, I guess.
Maybe he was on heroin.
I also think he was on heroin because they were just putting meth in the chocolate back then, dude.
It's true.
With the grift that some people are able to get away with. Some dude got a free doctorate out of it. Fouth?
He's a doctor now.
That is Professor Fouth now. His actual Wikipedia article lists him as a selenographer, which is a guy who maps the moon.
Oh, okay.
The part that sticks out to me is that, like, he didn't even need this, like, well-constructed theory. It literally came to him in a vision, and he was just able to convince everyone.
It seems like it was just a very good alignment of circumstances. Like, people wanted to separate themselves from conventional science. And when did they drop the refrigerator? When did that come out?
Yeah.
Maybe the ice chest freaked everybody out. Like, having ice in their homes had people thinking about ice all the time. True, and they lost their damn minds.
Ice madness.
True.
Exactly, like fan death.
But yeah, you know, it's a bit of a wacky science piece. It's a bit of a grifter history piece, you know. It's just weird, and it led to a very interesting discussion in the car with me and Dom. Basically just talking about grifting, and he was saying that he doesn't think that the average man is going to get caught in a grift like this. And I countered and I said, I think it's way fucking easier in this day and age to get grifted.
Okay, now to clarify, I mean, the way that Dan explained it was, man said in a dream that there was a waterlogged star. I don't know what that means, but knowing what a star is,
I mean, I guess I could see it because, you know, if you're a dude walking around in the 30s, you got no fucking idea if a waterlogged star is a thing or not.
Yeah, because obviously they had never seen anything above 10 miles over their head in the 30s, pretty much.
Yeah.
And, you know, planes were still a very new thing.
Yeah.
They were like, we can see the clouds now? Holy shit.
I don't know, what do you guys think?
We are in a very specific point in time where, like, over the past 2 to 3 months, the AI craze, like, you can't go anywhere on the internet without seeing the goddamn Joe Biden gamer videos. So yeah. I think we're in a flashpoint of griftability.
Well, they got one right now where they got Joe Rogan voice deepfakes advertising some fucking testosterone product, you know, like...
So I would call today a good day and age for grifting.
I don't know. Maybe there was never a bad day and age for grifting. Maybe the technology is just catching up and getting better.
Well, yeah, you don't have to, like, have a vision or pretend that a spiritual entity is through you. Now you can just show them a fake video.
Yeah. Now you can just fucking show Joe Biden talking about wizard weed.
Mm-hmm.
Damn. Damn, I always manage to make it a little sad when I'm last, bro.
You pull it into a let's call it, discussion. You know, we have a nutritional, different little tastes for every person that comes up.
Look, people, just look at everything twice, man. If it looks sketchy, it probably is sketchy. Don't get grifted.
If you want to grift me, send me an email at supermadtower@gmail.com.
That's right, folks. If you have ever got grifted, you can send your grifting story into the show at supermadtower@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter and Instagram at Mad Tower Radio. That's all I got. Well, everybody, this has been Mad Tower Radio, episode 53, ending transmission.
A frequency beyond space and time.
Unspeakable knowledge. It is Mad Tower Radio.